Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And if you've been listening each week, you know that this program is about this time of transformation we are in. We are evolving to become a greater planetary civilization, and we are actually shifting, I feel, our rate of frequency, our rate of vibration. And one of the people I feel who are most passionate about this time of change is tonight's guest, William Henry. William Henry has his own radio show on Unknown Country, William Whitley Strieber's radio station, and he has written a book called The Secrets of Sion. He's going to be talking about this time of transformation and how we are entering an age of awakening and gateways into other realities. Welcome, William, to the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Alan.
Yes, you are one of the foremost researchers, I feel, in this field of transformation, metaphysics, Stargate mechanics. And your website on Revelations is very interesting. William Henry's Revelations Stargate Radio. That's a show you do on Whitley Strieber station, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's on unknowncountry.com. It's a weekly show. We put up a new interview every Wednesday.
Right, and I had a great interview with you on that show, and I'm really happy you're on my show. So looking at your website, you talk about wormholes, ancient stargates. Now, I know you've researched this, but can you give us a little background about what you mean about stargates and the secrets of stargates?
Sure. Wonderful question. Thank you. I started researching these kind of ancient mysteries, especially as concerns the extraterrestrial facet, back in the early 90s. I cut my teeth reading the books of Zachariah Sitchin, who had some astonishing things to say about these ancient gods who came to Earth and had a hand in tinkering with our DNA, maybe limiting us, governing us, this sort of thing. The interaction with them is very complicated. But what really fascinated me about it was the number of depictions and the number of accounts in the ancient mythic and sacred tradition that would show these quote-unquote god beings, these extraterrestrials, coming and going from Earth via gateways that led to other locations in the stars or originated in other locations in the stars. And so then shortly after that, that incredible movie Stargate came out. Dr. Carl Sagan, whose book Contact was made into an amazing film with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey. And suddenly in the mid-90s, pushing towards 2000, we are seeing this just absolute explosion in this concept in the popular imagination that, hey, it's possible for us to travel the stars via gateways. It would be like, you know, going down to pick a building, the Empire State Building, and you press floor number 8 and you end up in the Pleiades, or you end up in Sirius or somewhere, as if there's nothing in between. It's an extraordinary concept that has an ancient precedent, but it also has a really profound metaphysics and set of symbols that goes along with it. And that's what I've spent my time trying to discover and illuminate, is that symbol system and the metaphysics that goes with this idea.
Well, what would be the mechanics or even the physics, not even the metaphysics and metaphysics behind a stargate? What do you guess it could be involved with?
Well, let me define a stargate. I have three levels or three layers of interpretation for what a stargate is. First, it's a connection from the heart of one sun or star to a heart of another star or star system. It is a place on Earth where the vibration, if you will, of a star or star system saturates the Earth or is mirrored on the Earth. For example, the three pyramids of Giza are famously, in the observation of Robert Bovall, in the similar alignment as the three belt stars of Orion. And there's a whole mythology that says the Great Pyramid, in fact, is some kind of a transformation machine or transfiguration machine, a stargate that links us with Sirius. So a stargate can be a place on Earth, which in the third definition is that it is an interstellar or intergalactic, interdimensional transportation system. And so when we look at a stargate from those perspectives, we find that, okay, there's a lot of ancient evidence about those. But the key thing to answer your question about the metaphysics and the physics of the Stargate, what I started noticing in many different mythic and sacred traditions is that when you would see a depiction of the gateway of the Stargate, or what is also referred to as a wormhole, or when you would read about a gateway story, there was also often a story of human transformation that accompanied it. There would be these stories about humans who would have to raise their level of purity, was often a term that they used, to reach the level of capability of the gods before they could access that gateway. And so based on that, I started thinking, well, the whole physics or metaphysics of the Stargate is based on the idea of the human being in a pupal phase, sort of like a cocoon, that can morph into a higher phase, the famous butterfly analogy. And it is that higher aspect of ourselves, that next level of evolution, that has the ability to access these gateways.
Right. You know, I've been researching this. They're also called portals.
Yes,
in,
of course.
In some traditions, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I went to the south of France and Spain with a woman named Patrice Chaplin. Do you know who she is?
Yes, of course I do. What a wonderful experience that must have been.
It was incredible. She outlined the 11 gateways that lead to the ultimate one on the top of Mount Canigou, the sacred mountain in Catalonia. And there are evidence that, well, she talks about it, but you can sense the change of reality as you step into these different portals. And it was quite an amazing experience to feel these places where the time-space continuum is sort of out of sync with the rest of the planet. There's a kind of overlay of other realities there. So
yeah, and what I find is so fascinating too is that, I mean, you can feel it when you're at one of these portals or one of these gateways. And very often people report that it's an uplifting feeling, but other times places, these stargates that I'm talking about, can have a maybe more of a mysterious feeling, or it can even go into a almost a feeling of like you're connecting with a darker side. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interesting aspect of it too. So they're all over the world. You mentioned southern France. That's just an astonishing place to go stargate hunting and looking for these energy spots. Giza.
Giza. No, I think also what you're saying is that sometimes I think the energy, it's like the weather. Sometimes there's an opening, sometimes it's positive energy, sometimes it's negative energy. There is someone who actually got killed at Mount Canigou attempting to go through a stargate. He was struck by lightning and thrown off the mountain there. It's quite serious. It's quite a serious undertaking. It's not something you just do thoughtlessly, is what I'm saying.
Well, right? And that's what I tell people. I mean, the classic Stargate story, or one of the earliest ones, is the Epic of Gilgamesh, which happens to be the oldest human story. It's an immortality tale. And in the story, Gilgamesh is told by a goddess, one of the Anunnaki, that he's two-thirds divine and one-third human. And if he wants to make it through the gate of the gods, which is the ultimate quest of all of us, make it through the portal, return to the stars as a celestial or star being, in order for Gilgamesh to do that, he was going to have to clean up his act. He was going to have to become not two-thirds divine, but completely divine, whole, holy, complete, 360. Otherwise, if he tried to go through the gate, he was going to get his feathers ruffled. And that's and what you cited there is an example of someone who may not have been at a high enough level of vibration in order to access that particular gateway.
Right, absolutely. So I think it is what you're saying, and at least in Patrice Chaplin's book, she also goes through her own purification process in attempting to enter these stargates. So
that to me is all of the ancient myths and traditions were about, I mean, or what has been concealed in sacred tradition or hidden behind the symbol, is this incredible power that we all have to ascend, if you will.
Yes.
In my presentations, I like to I use a lot of sacred art from Egypt and from the Judeo-Christian tradition that show, for example, Jesus transfiguring or metamorphosing into a being of light, or the resurrection scenes where Jesus is in a radiant rainbow, or the Egyptian scenes of the gods walking on their star boats. They're always showing us images of the next level for us. Mm. And what I like to say to people is that we're all kind of in that place of the two caterpillars I saw once in a cartoon. They're sitting there looking up at the butterfly saying, "You'll never get me up in one of those things."
Right.
And that's kind of where a lot of us spend our lives, or what we're breaking out of. It's only fear in our culture that says, hey, you know, you're not allowed to become a whole, holy, complete, fully functioning human being who's preparing to morph into a being of light. In fact, the culture says, who the hell do you think you are for thinking this is possible for you? But this is what's changing now, and it's programs and the work like you're doing, Alan, that do that. And anytime we're all getting together and thinking about this idea or discussing it, we're building the thought form around it and making it possible.
Right. So I don't even like go there, even addressing those old paradigms, thinking who the hell are you to think you are. What I'm interested in is how we do it, the technologies and what we need to change inside of us and outside of us in order to become the great gods that we are.
Yeah. So. It's bingo. That's it. And, is that a rhetorical question? Are you asking me that?
No, no. So the thing I am asking you is, so we've said two things. We said there's the personal ascension, where we sort of transmute the body into light and ascend with the body into the higher levels. And then there's the earth time space matrix, which are openings to other doorways. So how do you bring those two together, and how are they linked, and how do they assist each other in that awakening?
Well, rephrasing the question, are you asking how do we access these stargates? How do we go to a place and utilize them?
No, I think I'm asking, how does the ascension process or the individual process connect with the stargates that you have found around the planet? What's the connection between the two?
Well, the connection, as I see it, and this is coming from a study of myth and sacred tradition, as well as the artwork, is that it is our body itself that is the gateway. In other words, there is not a gateway per se out there necessarily. It's that we can put ourselves in a place where the body itself becomes the gateway. Let me explain how I came to that conclusion. I was at a UFO conference in Northern California a few years ago. Beautiful couple comes up to me. They're in their mid-50s. They tell me they both had PhDs from the Harvard Divinity School. They knew the Dalai Lama. They teach and were specialists, experts in the Tibetan rainbow body or great perfection tradition. And in this tradition, the belief is that, and as it has been demonstrated even into modern times, that the human body can be spun into a vortex. Its vibration can be accelerated until it dematerializes into five-colored rainbow light, or what they refer to as the rainbow body of light. And what this couple said to me is that my work answered for them a question that they had always asked the Tibetan lamas and the experts on the rainbow body, but no one would answer it, or perhaps couldn't answer the question. And that was, let me preface it with one other statement. The Tibetans teach that this rainbow body teaching, this idea that the body can be spun or resurrected into the rainbow body, that this teaching is taught in 13 star systems, including our own. And the Tibetans would teach that once the rainbow body is achieved, that it's possible for these lamas to then travel to these other star systems and perhaps even back to Earth. And what this couple wanted to know, which couldn't be answered or wasn't answered, was once they achieve the rainbow body, how do they get to these other star systems? How do they travel to them? And what they said was they were watching my DVD, Star Walkers and the Dimension of the Blessed, in which I was looking at the ancient Egyptian stargate metaphysics as found on the temple walls of Egypt and in the Egyptian sacred texts. And what these descriptions and depictions were showing was that once the gods ascended, they could travel on these ships of eternity, as they called them, or arcs of the millions of years that look exactly like the way modern science portrays a wormhole. Uh-huh. And when they saw that, this couple said, bingo, that's the answer right there. What happens, they believe, what they inspired me to start researching was this idea that once we achieve the rainbow body, it is our rainbow body that then opens the stargate or wormhole and then can travel to these other star systems. And so that kind of became the basis for my understanding or concept here, that the body itself is meant to be transformed into the gateway or into the body that is capable of manifesting the gateway. And again, go ahead.
No, I agree. Again, what were you going to finish saying there?
Well, I was just going to say that it's all about this idea, this metaphor that we're in a pupal phase, a cocoon phase, and we're meant to morph into that next level. And that next level is called the rainbow body by the Tibetans, the resurrection body by the Christians. There's numerous names for it. Almost every religious tradition has a name for this next human, the ultra human, the being of divine bliss with the super mental body, the illuminated body. There's dozens of names for it.
Yeah, and the Castaneda Toltec tradition, they talk about burning from a fire from within.
Yes.
And those books have been a big influence on me. And I think Carlos Castaneda's teacher, Don Juan, did ascend. He did develop the rainbow body, and he took his party of warriors with them. There were about 15 to 20 at that one time that ascended with Don Juan.
Yeah, and Alan, what if that becomes the norm? I mean, we can remember a time before the internet. What if next we're going to remember a time when people weren't popping off into their rainbow body all the time and taking people with them?
Exactly. You know, I studied with the teacher Rampha, who said he did that 35,000 years ago. He raised his body's frequency until it became light. And in front of 2 million people, he ascended.
Wow.
And he's come back through a channel, and or I mean, of course, he said he could lower the frequency of his body and manifest here, but he uh-huh. said it'd be easier for you to listen to someone who's channeling this being as opposed to me manifesting my 9-foot tall body here.
Right.
So anyway, but he said in his teachings that it's actually much easier to ascend than it is to die. Your body is geared towards ascension. It's geared towards its biophotonic potential, meaning the light capability in each cell wants to be activated into the next frequency of its evolution. And so that's the key. And now as the Earth's vibration gets quicker and quicker, and as the cosmic rays enter the planetary atmosphere, as our brains are opening up to its latent potential, I think the time of the rainbow body is upon us. I really feel that.
I agree with that, Alan. And the small piece or contribution that I make towards that is to really pick up on this Tibetan idea that the sacred image of just viewing the rainbow body imagery itself is imprinting our energy field. In fact, when they teach the Dalai Lamas the rainbow body, it used to be that they would go behind the Potala Palace in Tibet, and they would be taken into a temple room that is circular and would show nothing but images of the manifestation of the rainbow body. And this is how the teaching is transmitted. So I've started collecting all of these, as many as I can, images of ascension, and I put them all into my book, The Secret of Sion, so that people would have a images to meditate on, to contemplate, to reflect on, with full awareness that where the mind goes, the biology follows.
Absolutely. That is the thesis behind the mirror neurons. And we talked about this in another interview.
Yes.
Yes.
And so by mirroring what we're seeing in this art, as you said, our every cell, every bone, every fiber of our body wants to morph into the next level. And it just brings a sense of excitement to our being when we're engaged in this sacred art.
Right. I think, yes, yes. You think what?
This is Alex Gray.
Yes, I was going to just say Alex Gray, I mean, Sacred Mirrors.
Yeah.
Yes.
This
yes.
is the idea. And so so we're seeing a revival of the power of the image. And who knows? maybe with some kind of really cool avatar type technology combined with some kind of holographic technology, we can actually show an ascended human or a human in the process of ascending. And it could be just the impetus that is needed. Maybe 20 million people will watch something like this on TV or on their computers and will begin to mimic or model this whole process.
I think that's a great idea. If we can actually show it, we will start to kind of jumpstart the latent potential in ourselves to activate our light frequencies.
Absolutely. And then if you combine that, especially with maybe the presence of some sacred relics of a Buddha who has achieved the rainbow body or the ascension, we now know that those relics themselves carry that vibration and transmit it to and affect everyone and everything they come into contact with. So we're really very fortunate to be able to be in a place here where we can make this happen. Just need some people to come together to make it so. So maybe we can embark on that, Alan.
Let's do that. But yes, I agree. And the other key is what we talked about just in the earlier part. This is what I believe, that there are places on the earth that make the ascension easier to achieve. There's places where the time-space matrix are overlaid with less density that helps uplift the biophotonic capabilities.
And you know what's interesting about this, Alan, is that many urban areas around the world, including and especially the U.S., are beginning to feature Stargate art at places of transformation, transcendence, sacred spots. It's happening all over the country. And I'll give you an example in your own backyard, the African Slave Memorial there by City Hall.
Oh.
It's powerful. Back, what was it, 10, 15 years ago, they were renovating the federal building there, and they discovered a gravesite going back to Dutch colonial times, Dutch times, 1500s, of African slaves that had been brought to Manhattan. And they were all buried in this group grave. Well, they discovered this gravesite, and they built on top of it what's known as the African Slave Memorial. And it is one of the most powerful examples of Stargate art in an urban setting I've seen anywhere. And it was placed on this cemetery site. And I believe its ultimate purpose, while it may not be the conscious purpose of the architects who designed it, certainly one of its purposes in its design and its symbolism is to help to lift those souls out of that place and create a gateway for their ascension.
When you say Stargate art, you mean art that illustrates this transformation of the cellular?
I'm talking about Dallas, Texas, Thanksgiving Square. There's a 40-foot tall golden ring in a place that has got all kinds of transcendent imagery as well as sayings written on the wall. I mean, when people look at this, they immediately recognize this golden ring is actually a Stargate. There's, in fact, a platform that you stand on in the bottom of the ring. In Detroit, Michigan, there is a 90-foot tall ring gateway at Hart Plaza in downtown Detroit that's called Transcendence. And when you read the writing on the wall there, it's all about personal transformation, transcendence, walking the path, going to a higher level. In Chicago, you have artwork such as this. In Nashville, where I live, we've got a 2,200-foot-long magician's rod that is laid out and growing at the base of our state capitol. It's a living temple that's topped by a ring of 50, 25-foot-tall stone pillars that looks just like something out of Stonehenge and is clearly identifiable as a gateway. These are just a few examples of what we're seeing all around the country and all around the world of artwork that is derived from the concept of the Stargate or the wormhole that are popping up in these prominent urban centers, and they all feature a message about transformation or transcendence.
Are all these listed in your latest book?
They are in my latest book, yes. And in fact, if you go to my website, williamhenry.net, and take a look at my blog, scroll down my blog, you'll see some of these examples as well.
So do you think, I guess it's a subconscious motivation on the part of creation itself that is giving us these these tools, these visual tools that are assisting us in this realization of our true potential. Is that what you get?
Definitely. And I think it is that many of these artists are getting downloads from a universal mind, from a higher mind that is coming from all of us. We're all manifesting this consciousness. It's all around. And so naturally it should show up in the creative work of some of the brightest minds on the planet, where they start creating artwork or movies or I saw the Friskies commercial recently based on Puss in Boots, where Puss comes into a kitchen, pulls out a magic wand, whips open this rainbow stargate. It takes the cat he's visiting through to the magical cat world where they enjoy Frisky's cat food. Then Puss takes the wand again, opens the rainbow stargate, and they go back into the ordinary world. So we're using the idea of the stargate now to sell cat food. It's everywhere in our culture.
Wow. So this is really, I didn't realize that. I mean, I was hoping for it, but I didn't realize it was so prominent. Of course, you know what you're looking for. Other people may just come across it and have a seed planted in their consciousness of some possibility.
Right. So. And, you know, I guarantee you the next, there's a mega spectacle that's unfolding right now in London for the 2012 Olympics. London itself is being transformed into this incredible kind of cosmic place. They're building a model of Glastonbury Tor there, and they're working all kinds of grail imagery into the opening ceremony of the Olympics, when 1 billion people worldwide will be tuned in and glued to their TVs. Well, right beside the Olympic Stadium is the new Tower of London. It's a sculpture by Anish Kapoor, who's a noted British sculptor who does all kinds of wormhole type artwork. Well, he won the contest for this sculpture to be built to symbolize the London 2012 Olympics. And it's the new icon of London. And the people who look at it say, this looks like some kind of serpent coming out of the ground. But when you look at it more closely from the wormhole perspective, you can see that it's just like a lot of Anish Kapoor's other artwork. It's got wormhole symbolism in it. And he said it's based on the Tower of Babel, which was originally a ladder, tower, or stairway, stargate to heaven. So here's the new icon for London and the symbol of the 2012 Olympics, this incredible piece of stargate art.
Wow, and it fits in with the whole myth of the Mayans, the return of Quetzalcoatl, the plume serpent, right? The plume serpent is the worm that's ascending to heaven. You know,
you got it. Well done, Alan. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah, you're right. I mean, and the Mayans talk about a serpent rope coming out of the center of the galaxy that Quetzalcoatl rides upon. It's like an umbilical cord. And when I show people the side-by-side comparison of the Mayan illustration of the serpent rope and Anish Kapoor's tower in London, they're blown away because it's easily and effortlessly identified as the same thing.
And now at this time where it seems like we are getting all this solar radiation, which I think is a good thing in a way, we're moving to a new place in the galaxy where there'll be a new heaven and a new earth.
Yeah.
And what I got was that the earth itself is giving us these earth bodies, but what the earth longs to do is to become a star, and the way the earth becomes a star is through the human vehicle. That's what I got.
Fascinating. You know, a couple of things. I keep an eye on the sun as well. One of the reasons why is because, I mean, you asked about transformation technology earlier and how it relates to Stargate technology. There's a great story of the Archangel Michael visiting Enoch, who was a guy, a scholar, learned man, wise man who lived before the flood. Enoch is taken up to heaven by the Archangel Michael, and Michael takes an oil, a sacred oil, and rubs it on Enoch's body, and suddenly he becomes one of the glorious ones, one of the shining ones. He takes on the rainbow body. I'm thinking, wow, are they really saying that there's like an oil that perhaps is passed along that can cause this transformation? Well, the interesting thing about it is that recently, because I'm so interested in ancient sun stories and metaphysics, I mean, the ancients literally believed that our sun was a sun tunnel or a star tunnel or what we may call a stargate, that the way to heaven was through the sun. Well, lo and behold, here's this ancient belief that our sun is a star tunnel, stargate, or wormhole. And now Russian cosmologists are saying, you know what? We think our sun could be like other stars that are out there, that its center might in fact be hollow, and it manufactures what they called, and it's here's their term, our sun manufactures a perfect oil that keeps open the mouth of a wormhole so that an object or something could travel through our star to another star system. And I'm sitting here going, really? And they're proposing an oil that our sun manufactures, some kind of an oil that keeps a stargate open? Could it be possible that this is the source of the oil that Michael rubbed on Enoch that transformed him into a shining one? I mean, it's a wild speculation, but
no, but it gets into so many different things, what you've just mentioned there. First of all, the work of Nassim Haramim, who says there's a black hole inside of every sun. Do you know his work?
No, I've heard about it, but I don't know it.
You gotta interview him. He'll add a whole nother scope to your thesis. He is brilliant, and he has a brilliant understanding that that there's singularities in the center of all major substances, like the center of atoms, the center of molecules, the center of cells, the center of stars. There's progressive and fractal progressions of these black holes in the center of all things. Even the universe itself, he says, is a giant black hole, and he has the physics to really prove it. I'll set you up with him because he is someone who you'll love, and he's working in the field of science to prove exactly what you're saying as well.
That's fantastic. I very much enjoy and appreciate that. And one other thing, let me mention on what you were saying, Alan, about the Earth wanting to become a star in relation, especially to the sun. There was a recent report that just knocked my socks off that said that recently there was an infusion of cosmic rays from the sun. And for the first time ever, and this baffled scientists, for the first time ever, our Earth responded to those rays.
Ah, how did it do that?
Well, with like a flash. And so they're just like, well, what's causing that? And it makes me wonder if we aren't setting up some kind of resonance with the sun in a really extraordinary way, and maybe even a new way. And that we will start to see the Earth responding to this higher vibration and kind of busting out of her shell, so to speak, and raising her vibration.
Well, I think that is happening. I think the whole alignment with the galactic center showing that we have actually a bigger relationship to a bigger neighborhood. For such a long time, we thought we were just solar based. There was the sun and the nine planets and the Earth, and there was that whole thing. What 2012 is doing, if nothing else, is showing us that we're in a much bigger neighborhood, you know?
Exactly. I mean, think about the expansion of consciousness that represents in and of itself. To now
exactly.
We're orienting ourselves towards the center of the galaxy. We didn't even know there was a galactic center until the 1930s.
And now we realize that we are in relationship to that.
Exactly. And not only does our galaxy have a galactic center, but there's hundreds of billions of galaxies out there, we now know.
Right. But also getting back to this idea about an oil, it brings me back to the idea of alchemy, the whole thing of the philosopher's stone, and they would make the oil of the metal. And so I think what you're getting at in the whole Book of Enoch there, and Enoch being rubbed by this oil, could be the foreshadowing or the foretelling of the philosopher's stone or the sacred elixir that would activate the light potential. In the book The Red Lion, which is a whole history of alchemy, it talks about the evolution of one soul towards finally being able to handle the ingestion of the philosopher's stone so they could become light. Do you know that book?
I do know that book. In fact, I have a copy of it here. I got it a couple of years ago out at Joshua Tree. A friend who's deep into alchemy highly recommended that book, saying this is the one go-to book on alchemy out of all of them.
But actually, it was published originally in English in Tennessee, and then a woman brought it to – anyway, it's a whole story. But because there was a it was originally published in Hungary in Hungarian, wow. And then brought to Hawaii. I found that book in Hawaii. I brought it to someone who bought the English rights to it and then published it again. So, and then that book's been all over because I think it's so influential in understanding how alchemy and the soul's evolution are so linked and how that is in combination to this point of frequency of turning into light itself.
Yeah. And let me make a comment on that, if I may. I did a presentation throughout 2011 called The Anointed, which was exclusively as I could make it about that oil. How do we create that oil? How do we make, manufacture, acquire that oil? I mean, it seems to be the central question. And I traced it through Enoch, the whole the Sethian stories about it. Adam and Eve had their sons Cain and Abel, but they had a third son, Seth, to whom was bequeathed all of the real mysteries of Eden, including the secrets of the tree of life that made that oil. And then it shows up in the story of Enoch and Michael. Then later on, it appears in the story of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, where Mary Magdalene has this oil. The Gnostic term for it is chrism. And the Gnostic Gospel of Philip says chrism is the source of the word Christian, and chrism, this sacred oil, is the is what produces the resurrection. So this is saying exactly what is told in the story of Michael and Enoch. And so it gets down to Jesus and Mary Magdalene knew the secrets of this oil, and he this oil is also symbolized by a garment of light. And it's referred to as exousia, which means the power. It means the power. It means liberty. It means freedom. It means capability, right to act, all these sorts of things. And the interesting thing is that this power, and hence this oil, this vibration that creates the oil, was transmitted at the Last Supper by Jesus to the disciples, including Mary Magdalene. Now,
how was it transmitted to those people at that time?
He emanated it. It's coming from his being. He was that vibration. Ooh. And here's where I ultimately went with this, Alan. Most might know this. They might not know this. But the fact is that pharmaceutical companies are scared straight right now because the power of the placebo is increasing. A placebo is when an object that has no healing or therapeutic value brings about a healing. Like, for example, a sugar pill. A doctor comes in, and this is what the pharmaceuticals would do. They would test their pharmaceuticals against a placebo. And what they discovered is that the placebos were beating all of the new pharmaceuticals in their testing. And they furthermore got it down to an understanding of exactly what kind of box to put the pill in, the shape of the pill, the color of the pill, and recommendations for names that have more power. And what I ultimately began to wonder and posed as really ultimately a question is, let's say you're an extraordinarily powerful being, Jesus, and you stand before a group of people. Well, for example, Mary Magdalene. Let's say that Jesus initiated Mary Magdalene in the secrets of this oil, and now Mary Magdalene carries this understanding and the secret and this ability to transmit it. What if their power of belief was so strong that all Mary Magdalene had to say was, this oil that I have here will cause you to begin to morph into a light being, and because of their belief, they began to morph into light beings. Mm-hmm. In other words, what if there is no oil and it's just the power of our mind, the power of our thoughts that actually creates the oil?
Well, that's an idea. You can say that about anything, though. What if it's the power of our mind that's just creating the world around us? I don't know. I think there is a world out there, and I think it's a kind of co-creation, and as we, lend our intention to something like the oil then responds and adds a bad intention to us. It's like the water with Emoto. You put love into the water and the water feeds you love. I mean, I know what you're saying and I don't know, but I think we use the world to evolve ourselves and the world uses us to evolve itself somehow.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure. I do think there is something definitely to placebo effect and to the power of the mind to create reality. That's what this whole show is about, creating new realities. If you don't create your own reality, a reality will be created for you is what I say.
Yeah, so, lead, follow, or get out of the way, right?
Right. So I think there is something to that, but I think there is something, well, maybe it was the intention of the alchemists that put all that energy into the transmutation of the lead into gold, that finally that monoatomic gold had the power to uplift the body into its light frequency. But it was years and years of intention and focus that did that. So, I think there is that power of focus that is the transmutating element. And I think, like we've been saying, it seems to be catching on. It seems to be getting easier to activate that potential at this time in our history.
The thought form is being built. The culture is shifting. Images of transformation are being presented to us, and we need more of it. And that's the thing. I mean, each thought about what we're describing here sends out those immense ripples, and we've got to just keep those ripples coming and accelerating. And that to me is the biggest part of it. And I look for a day when we're going to see in America, for example, and this isn't to say I'm not disparaging Christianity, but the Christianity symbol is the cross. It's a symbol of suffering as well as transcendence. But what if we lived in a culture where there were more examples of rings or portals or gateways all over the place than there were images of suffering, such as the cross?
Right.
That would really bring out a whole new kind of mindset in a way, because the idea of the Stargate, the metaphysical idea of it anyway, is that we're all in the same ring together. And we're all doing the same thing. We're all unified, whether we acknowledge it or not. And that ultimately we're all aiming for wholeness and indeed perhaps even holiness. That's the purpose of life, is to become healthier, happier people and to do everything we can to raise the vibration of the entire human race.
Right. And we are, like you said, we're developing a culture, and I think we are hitting critical mass, which some people say may be 144,000 people who totally know this to be a truth. And then boom, it resonates throughout the whole morphogenetic field of the human race. I mean, why not? Right?
Why not? I mean, as I said, we could barely imagine, or we lived during a time where we couldn't even imagine the internet, mm-hmm. or maybe even the cell phone. You know, you and I aren't that old, Alan, but, you know, we lived in a time when, hey, some of this stuff was just a pipe dream. And now it's real. It's the basis for our culture. And we got to be coming up to the next great leap in the human imagination, where new tools and ideas and possibilities will come forward. I happen to believe it's centered around the idea of rainbow body transformation, teleportation, Stargate travel. And this will become the norm in this new world, just as the cell phone and the internet is the norm in this present evolution.
I agree. But it's also about then activating the power within each individual to know that they are the Christ, the joyful being, the that aspect of creation that realizes its truth of its divinity. That's what we need. That's where we're at.
Yeah, and this gets back to the idea where the movie idea, the inspirational animation or presentation of the rainbow body becomes so important, because that's like putting the pill in the hamburger. Whereas if you tried to give a presentation to someone who really wasn't open or aware or awake about the rainbow body, they wouldn't be that interested. But you show them something really cool and inspiring, they'll flock to it.
Right. And it gets back to the alchemy, because I think the power of gold was, like we said, in a way, like mirror neurons, that untarnishable essence, that radiance of gold itself activated the potential of that light being to come forth within the human being. That's why I think gold was so sought after in every civilization, because they knew it had that key to unlocking our light potential, our risen Christed body to become awakened. You feel that about gold and its potential.
Yeah, I do, because it originates in supernova explosions, and we're all trying to kind of go supernova and manifest that next higher level. I mean, it's fascinating to me that sometimes when stars go supernova, they transform into butterfly shapes. And it's one of those, they turn into cosmic butterflies. It's one of those as above, so below metaphors that just works. All the elements of our body were once contained within a supernova. And gold on Earth just happens to be one of the most highest perceived value elements of all.
Well, because I think it radiates the kind of highest frequency and represents in physicality the potential of what we are.
Yes. And that's why, you know, getting back to that, what we talked about a moment ago, going for the gold, the Olympics, and all the symbolism that we're going to see around the Olympics next month is so important, because it's guaranteed to be about these themes that we've been just talking about here.
So now we've established the groundwork of what we feel, me and you and many others, perhaps not a majority, but many feel as a potential. But so what do you feel we need to do as a civilization, as individuals, to start to move towards this realization?
Well, my answer would be the same as how do we achieve the rainbow body? According to the Tibetans, it's a three-step process. First, we have to be directly introduced to our true nature. We have to be able to imagine who we really are. Again, where the cocoon's looking up at the butterfly. We really are, who we truly are, is actually the butterfly, not the cocoon. The second thing is, after once we can imagine or visualize what that next level looks like or acts like, feels like, then we have to believe that we can do this. And we have to then live our life with the expectation that this is going to happen, and live our lives as if we were avatars or already members of this race or tribe of advanced and wise humans, who are called perfect light humans, among other things, who have achieved this next level and are beckoning us to join them. So we imagine it, we believe it, and we live it. We act on it on a daily basis. And for each individual, those actions might be different. It might be becoming more loving, more joyful, working on building the physical body so that we can have a longer time on the planet to be able to research these ideas, go to these stargates, absorb this energy. Whatever it is that we need, and we all know what changes we need to make in our lives in order to get to a higher level of vibration, we just need to begin doing those things, and knowing that as each individual does them, it becomes easier and easier for the collective, the 100th monkey effect, right?
Right. I mean, there are people who say they have ascended. There was that woman in the 30s, what was her name, Edie or Amy? There's a lot of controversy around some of the people who claimed ascension. There's the spontaneous combustion. Do you feel those are people that have ascended or not?
I don't categorize them that way. I mean, we're talking about more like the Jesus types. We're talking about St. Francis of Assisi. We're talking even in Tibet into the 1950s, there were said to be documented cases of lamas achieving the rainbow body. So I think that the rainbow body manifestation is different from some of these other events.
Okay, we have to wrap up. Thank you. That was the producer coming on saying that we have to wrap up. I just want to say there's a good friend of mine, J.J. Hertog, who wrote the book Keys of Enoch, who
yes. –
I think he's had an ascension experience and someone who's come back to talk about it. Of course, he's probably trying to get back there himself, but he's an example of that. William, sorry we have to – this has been an amazing conversation, and we'll do it again at some point. Tell people how to get in touch with you, when your radio show's on, and your website.
Okay. My website is williamhenry.net. When you get there, you can click on the Revelations tab, which will take you over to unknowncountry.com, which hosts my Revelation show. That's Whitley Strieber's site. Meanwhile, I've got some events coming up in Atlanta and then Nashville, where I live, later this fall. And I've got tours coming up to Peru in October, Egypt in November, where we'll be actually going to these stargates, studying them, feeling the energy, and absorbing everything we can in sort of a expedition/training tour. And beyond that, I would just look forward to hearing from anybody, and who knows, might make it up to New York sometime, hopefully.
I would love to host you in New York. Let's talk about that. Thank you for being a guest on New
My
Reality.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
Oh, sure. This is really the cutting edge of new realities, the light potential and the ascending possibilities. And I've talked to a previous guest, Anella Benz, about possibly putting on an Ascension conference in New York, and I'll let you know about that.
Wonderful. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so if people want to reach me, they can go to my website, newrealities.com. You can also email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. I've been talking to William Henry tonight, who's really dedicated his life to this kind of research and the possibility and the reality that our potentials as human beings are in our light activation and in our bodies ascending. So thank you for listening tonight, and I welcome your comments, and same time next week. Good night.
Waking up in the middle of my life, nothing's what it seems. Feel the fire come alive.
In the fire,
come alive.